All right, so let's call to order the Thursday, January 22nd, 2015 North Bend Planning Commission regular meeting. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of January 8th, 2015. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Second.
Okay, motion by Dick and seconded by Jim. Any changes or comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Is there anybody from the public wishing to address the Planning Commission on nothing from the agenda?
I certainly would.
Please state your name and address for the record.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Travis Bridgman. I live here in North Bend on 713 Ogle Avenue Northeast. And I just want to kind of speak some words for optimization. Optimizing the zoning code. It feels like when the high density code was made up kind of in the Alpine era of the city preceding, I'm not sure if that's the same type of code restrictions and registration or regulations as what's being looked today. So along with the just re-looking at what does high density mean, what can you actually build, is that something achievable today? As far as also making like a cottage zone is actually LDR 14, say. I may be a little bit off, but it's not a cottage zone, it's actually just residential that allows 14 units. Now we have residential that allows 4, which actually is questionable. So if we look at our zoning, how much density can we actually put in the city and have LDR 5 or 7 and keep the 14 and just really simplify it and make it optimization to allow outside investors to kind of clue in with the rest of the world. So if people want to come here and build their family, they don't need to, they can. It's more universal. It looks more like, not that we should look like everyone else in the world, but possibly our zoning restrictions should be in tune with their civilization. And that's all.
Thank you, Travis. All right. So next item on the agenda is number 4, the comp plan housing element discussion. So Jamie, would you like to introduce that?
Sure. So Lynn worked on this, and then she's flying out on a red eye tonight to see family. So, and at your next Planning Commission meeting.
Left her to the wolves, has she?
No. I've helped her, but I had to give her some kudos. So, your next meeting, February 12th, we have noticed a public hearing, and that would be for the housing and the utilities element, and then I think we're bringing back to you some of your suggested edits and questions, information on the utilities element. So the housing element, we went through and updated as we saw necessary, you know, the census data, kind of flagged some questions to think about, just revising, giving it a fresh look, and knowing that we have quite a few changes because of the annexation that happened out to the east in Trucktown, so that changes numbers, and then the growth that we've had the past couple years and that is projected to continue. So what else was I going to mention here? So again, it's just a check of, you know, is this making sense? Is it easy to read? Are we elaborating too much in certain areas, or do we need to have more discussion in certain areas? We look at the goals and policies to see if, you know, we feel like anything there needs to be updated. And then the one kind of piece to come would be the build-out analysis, which Mark Ramsey, our GIS tech, is working on with the zoning amendments you guys recommended. So that fits into here a little bit, but we wanted to continue moving forward and So I can pull this up on the screen. We can kind of go through and get your comments. And then we did get comments from, maybe I'm thinking of the ones you sent over for utilities. So maybe we haven't received comments yet from the folks who weren't able to attend tonight. But we hope to get that from them or maybe at the next meeting. So.
Before we get into it, I just want to see, I have some questions, and I don't know if anybody else does. So if you want to go
first. Jimmy touched on the question I was going to ask. I didn't see in here, it wasn't obvious for me to see where we had folded in the new dimensional ordinance that was passed a few months ago. Is that in here to make a lot of sense?
It's not, because our challenge is, you know, we can change the code at any time. And the comp plan can only be changed once a year, and then you do a larger cycle every 5 to 7 years. So we don't want to be too specific in here, because then if we change the code back or forth, then this is out of date all of a sudden.
So it's referenced, but so it's not specific.
It can give direction. Yeah.
You know. Concept guidelines.
Yep. Yep.
So I just want to double check the important.
Yes.
Three or four.
Three. So, I'm just curious, is there anything on our zoning map that designates where we would see low-income housing, or how do we provide for that currently today?
We don't have anything mapped. We don't have specifics for providing it. You know, we don't have, we have policies that say, you know, encourage and work with the Seattle Housing Authority, and it's definitely permitted, and, but we could incentivize more, and I think that's in some of the policies, you know, reduced fees or expedited processing.
So when you say permitted, if I'm looking in the types of housing permitted mm-hmm. in LDR, it's going to have a P in that column for low income?
It doesn't call out low income separately. It's just going to be, what is it? Is it an apartment complex, or is it a single family? Or so it would fall under one of those and be permitted. And that was one of the questions we had, is, you know, should we be more specific, and, you know, what would our goals be, or do we leave it up to market-driven and see what comes? Well, I think incentives are good, you know, for...
Well, it could be a policy of the city mm-hmm. to encourage low mm-hmm. cost housing.
Yeah, and we do. We have that sort of language, but that's it as far as, you know, that goes. So.
I suppose I look at where, and I don't know that it's appropriate for here because it's far more detailed. When we were talking about incentivizing, mm-hmm. I, as an example, look at the difficulty the city of Snoqualmie is having in meeting their state goals mm-hmm. because of objections to. Reductions in permit fees and, mm-hmm. and other things to, with the, in particular the Imagine Housing Project, mm-hmm. that they were trying to get done, that was going to be more than 3 or 4 housing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how we balance that, or mm-hmm. if this is even an appropriate place to be talking mm-hmm. at that level, beyond the very generic, we don't really have a plan for it, but we want to do this, and it's important to the mm-hmm. city, but my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Were you saying that you had heard that Snoqualmie has struggled with the fact
the
that
the project has died a couple mm. times. As far as I know, it's currently kind of in an mm. indefinite hiatus, mm-hmm. not going anywhere mm-hmm. because of objections to them reducing fees mm-hmm. or changing the requirements for the shared infrastructure costs mm-hmm. or adding roads, for example,
yeah.
That they had intended in their planning to provide lower fees in order to encourage mm. affordable housing, but there were some objections that indicated that it might have some conflict with the state law and the idea of fairness. And mm. if you allow that to one developer, you'd have to allow that to all.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, again, why we might not want to get very specific in mm. what we say in something like this
mm-hmm.
About how we would go about encouraging yeah. that sort of development.
And Snoqualmie must have not codified a lot of that, so it was kind of open-ended, like you said. Mm-hmm. And then there is usually an indicator as far as if it's I don't remember the exact targets, it's probably in here, but there's you know, moderately low income, and then there's low income, and you can try to target the folks that are really low income, you know, at the bottom, and give incentives for them, but not, you know, because a lot of time, if it's not locked in, then, you know, I mean, they can turn around and sell it at market rate, and then you've lost your, so they have to put something on the title or ensure that it's going to stay.
I believe that was part of the issue. It was more than when the project was in the process of them trying to actually make it happen, there were objections because of essentially discounts that would be given to that developer in the process of putting the project related to infrastructure. And again, this is something I haven't read in detail. It's just some information. So from my perspective in here, if we keep it general on that we support this, I don't know. I guess I would be, I mean, let's not use too much detail, but indicate that it is a, it's an important part of the...
And that's done here, I think. Several points, 14 pages that talks about low income, disability complexes.
That all comes trickle down from GMA, right? The language, the requirements. So we're all just, you know, we're following the company line, basically.
So
trying to make a rule that we didn't make apply to us.
Yeah. If you want to go to page 6, that's where it mentions the King County policies propose that cities provide 16% of all new housing units to be affordable to households with income ranges 50 to 80%. And then 22% to be affordable at the 50%. And then if you take our 649 households, you can see that's a pretty big number. And then Lynn's comment here, do we want to include this as guidelines?
Where are you, Jim?
The comment on the top of page 6. And I had exactly your comment, Elizabeth, was just, or make it a goal and be more vague.
Well, my question is, we're not a brand new city. Mm-hmm. So do we have anything in North Bend Municipal Code that establishes any guidance? Or if this is a guideline, then do we create what we want as our own standards?
Yes.
And we don't have to follow what they recommend, but we do have to follow GMA's recommendation. And so what I'm confused on page 3, where do we fall in those levels of age 2, 4, 5, 8, 12, and 18? I wasn't able to find how we're identified in that structure. Mm-hmm. And maybe that would be some starting guidance to help us figure out where exactly we should plan.
Well,
what level we should plan.
Yeah, I think like H2, for example, I mean, we do that in our chapter. We recognize that population, and we have policies, and we leave it at that, essentially, for that one. We offer a range of housing types and densities. H12. Yeah.
I go to H12, and I think of us as, you know, wanting to have a rural character and more... low-density residential than we do anything else. So I don't
But we do have areas. There's still opportunities. There's still more dense areas, zoning-wise. You know, the neighborhood business, the downtown commercial, there still are opportunities.
Can I throw a couple things in just a conversation if we're going to go this? First, I started looking at this thing. Oh, this is really simple. We'll go through this really quick. But I realized throughout it, there's an assumption. Number one, that the census data is correct. That's the first huge assumption. Mm-hmm. The second one is using North Bend's household income here, state of 2013, is a little over 81,000. Taking 30% of that, that puts someone from household paying $2,000 a month for housing. It's a lot of rentals around for that. And now, you can buy a house for less per month if you've got the down payment. Mm-hmm. So this whole concept to me of affordable housing, what exactly does it mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you even get your head around it, mm-hmm. other than the idea that we want everybody to somehow be able to afford a house?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Is it a tent? Is it a yurt?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a 5,000-square-foot mansion?
I came up with that same question, and looking at a summary of data, I struggled. And so I went to the U.S. Census Bureau, and I don't know why we're at 2013 or 2010. I know 2010 was a full census data year, and that's what they seem to have a lot of data on. And so when I'm looking at all the different income levels, and I can see, where is it? Break it down in so many different ways. Now, it was somewhere that we have a lot that make between 50 and 150,000. That's the bulk of the population. And then there's a small percentage that's below it. Oh, do you have it up there?
I don't know if it's on there. It's
sort of in the bar graph.
Yes, in the bar graph.
Pink and blue bar graph sort of mentions that. Mm-hmm.
Page 5. Yeah.
Yeah, this kind of shows it.
And this language that we're reading, is this, where did this originate?
From our existing comp plan.
So 10 years ago, roughly?
Yeah, 2007, so yeah, 7 years.
And the Wood River / Truck Town annexation was 2011?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's part of, it's included
in here. That should probably be a big spike.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in household, but in income.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about that neighborhood relative to the rest of the city.
Yeah, you can see population, number of households jumps there for that reason.
No. I think it's all a good discussion. I'm just, there's so much data and so many different points that we have to know what we can rely on. So,
to kind of circle back to what you said about Snoqualmie Ridge, there's two scenarios there that I sort of became acquainted with. One of them was the Habitat for Humanity. There were a couple of sites designated for that process. And I think some of the first homes completed, occupied, and then resold, the seller, i.e. the person who received the assistance, made a boatload of money.
No, you could do that with Habitat.
It was a combination of Habitat developer relationship with another. So I don't want to start a story, but the concern always is that.
Are we going to allow them to purchase the low market and then make money off it? I will leave it out that I have experience with the Habitat communities in county as a volunteer, and I'm fully aware of the contract that they signed, and that is a legend, urban legend.
Okay.
They're not allowed to do that. There can be an adjustment based on what, within a certain range, but they usually walk away with about what they need.
Okay.
It's very rare. They don't make
more. So let me, if I may, if, because Gary and I were touching on this the last meeting, if this is all under the affordable housing concept,
right?
So if a party is, by whatever means, provided a discount to something, in this case housing, that discount stays flat if they can't benefit like the rest of the market.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have basically rent control as they do in other major metropolitan areas, New York in particular. It forces everything to be unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
So across the board, to me, the affordable housing concept is flawed. Someday people will figure that out. Always, I think, the market will come to whatever is provided. If we make it really cheap to live in North Bend because we've got an incredible incentive for developers to build cheap housing, then people will be able to afford a new car to drive to work from Seattle to North Bend. This is the crazy example, right? That you can skew it so far off by trying to do the right thing that you do the wrong thing. What you'd rather do is perhaps have someone be able to afford in the city and they can walk to work concept, rather than let's put it all out of North Bend. So as we go through this, and I don't know if this is the end of it or not, but it really troubles me if we're using data that's potentially flawed. I look at this one statistic, and I'll just get clarification here, using, this is the over a sheet, didn't have a page number.
Oh, that's the building permit activity.
Application data, yeah. So this graph shows 2014, there were 300 building permits issued. I'm assuming that's not, that's all building permits. Right? Mm-hmm. This one over there.
313?
As opposed to new home?
Right, and then single family permits were 33. Mm-hmm. And then back to 2013, there were 339 building permits and 123 single family. So is the single family inside the building permit count? Is that tally inside the number? Or should I add them together?
Single family residential. So no, the single family residential permits issued are separate. Building permits encompass a whole lot of other things.
So do they include single family permits as well?
I would not think so. I'll double check with Tom, but I would not think.
So the reason I'm asking that question is it comes over to the tally, the total building permits impact fee revenue.
Yep.
If you take that number and divide it into the building permits issued, comes out somewhere in the ballpark of about $10,000 per building permit. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about affordable housing, realize because of our fees and the things that are collected the moment somebody brings in a building application, yeah, that extrapolates out to the finished product. Mm-hmm. The buyer's got to pay that fee plus whatever the carry cost for the construction time, which might be a year. Mm-hmm. So a down payment for a house to be purchased is paid in fees before they even think own break, even breaks ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our impact fees for like the single family residential, you know, are mid 20,000s. I mean, and building permits themselves, you know, a lot of those would be additions or remodels, or so they're not going to have those impact fees, but new single family would, or new anything would.
Other terms for affordable housing is subsidized housing.
Oh, yeah. That makes it crystal clear what's really happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We probably should have more of that in this field. There's some of it over for quality. Let's say look at the low-lying areas, but there's others that are totally re-insulated with them, you know, drug problems. North Bend, if you're in North Bend, should be thinking more about subsidized housing for low-income people and retired elders and, you know, low-income, that kind of thing.
We actually do have some for low-income
people, so that's what's in the form of the storage
projects.
Yeah, it was mentioned here, but it's
not
it.
There's not a lot of it, and you see a lot of people that are down and out. And I think that's part of the challenge of seeing younger people who are not at a point that they're buying a home. And we see older people who are being forced out without the
kids. I mean, using your data on that for conversation, I think it's just really quite awkward for us as a growing community not to have a better inventory of subsidized housing, essentially.
Well, it's not necessarily that, it's having a mix of having, if you kind of have a mental image, that crazy Stephen King line of the show, so if they enclosed us in a bubble, do we have a mix of people and jobs that we would need to survive? Mm-hmm. And I don't think the answer right now is right. And the question is, how do we get to the point that we do? It's more complicated than accepted housing, which is what we're supposed to talk about.
Well, it's all tied together. You can't do the bubble dance. That's what the GMA tried to do. It was like draw a circle around every. That doesn't work. You can't be self-contained.
Well, it's not realistic, but at the same time, it can be a goal to make sure that we don't have people whose children have to move out of the community. And there are a lot of them that they live in Renton, they live in Issaquah, and they travel back here to work. We're creating a situation in which we're separating families because they have the choice of either continuing to live together while they grow, or moving and then driving between the two places. So where can we find a medium so that we have a mix, a balanced mix of housing types? And that's not necessarily just adding Section 8 for low income, it's having something across the spectrum.
So I also want to keep talking about the younger people that need affordable housing, because I'm looking at whether it be in our state or at the federal level, if we pay for 2 years of community college, then that means your kids will be at home or close to home and needing a place to stay. Our community, if I look at the demographics, is in that 38-40 range. We have at least two kids a household in the majority of our city. So that means it's a large demand at some point that all these kids will have, and the closest being Bellevue, you know.
Well, and they may choose to live closer to campus in Bellevue since we don't have a community college option or classes out.
That,
so
that fell would, through.
That does become
So that's where I came back with HDR, you know, in that zoning, because I think that would help fill some of that gap. I don't know, you know, if that's going to hit those people who are under 50, but with a roommate, maybe it is. Going back to our policies on page 6, we left off. So there's nothing from our city that's necessarily adopted something. And if we don't want to get too specific in our code, because that makes us rely on our data, you know, or other points that are going to fluctuate. Do you have any thoughts on what we should do here with the table, the wording?
Which table, please?
Page 6 of the comment from Lynn. If we want to, 3-2, we want to include that in our.
I just snapshot. We're starting off with questionable data. I don't want to put it into a table that makes it look like it's real. I mean, that's a first blush. It's like turning the wrong set of facts into a chart to prove the point.
Well, the 649 households is correct.
Right.
So that's our
target.
That's defined by.
That's our growth that was given to us.
Right. But I'm back to this. What's a household? Is one person a household?
No, a household is an adult with a child under 18 under the census.
So two people.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that sounds.
You get my point. I'm left with this. Is it three generations under one roof, or is it one person? Does that is somewhere in the middle? Mm-hmm. And then there's a note underneath this table. That reads, 2013, the median household income in King County was $59,000, while 50% of the median household income in King County was $29,000, and 80% was $47,000. Again, we're back to discussing King County versus what we currently show as the city of North Bend.
Well, I think that's the point of the note on page 6 is that pointing out that do we want to use this number that's really based on which county when we have a higher. Just lost the page, so that you know where they're talking about having the 50 to 80 or the 22% of all units. When we have different, a higher median income within the city, are those numbers truly correct for us?
Yep. I say scratch the table. And I'm always kind of running this kind of thing through a filter of saying if this goes further up the ladder and a citizen who doesn't study this
you know, at all. We barely study it, I think. I can speak for myself. They would come in, look at this chart and say, well, that's not matching up with what they see 5, 6, 7, 10 years from now. So, trying to simplify it actually makes it wrong. It's not just clear.
Anybody opposed to removing it? No?
Okay. Administrative change. We have to vote. I'm going to ask another kind of clarification. Down at the bottom of the same page, 6 of 14. Right? Mm-hmm. The 649 number is a target 20 years out. We've gotten half of that in the last 2 years. So it seems kind of crazy to another WAG number, right?
Well, wait, when you say gotten that, we have plans but not permitted.
But this is looking out 20 years from now to suggest.
Yes, 10 yeah. Yeah. Of more than likely to hit it in 3 years.
Probably triple that.
Yeah. And that may be back to the other factor we talked about before with the water moratorium and the follow-on trashed economy that our reality is very different than closer in.
I think when we were in our moratorium, we had a target of like 636, and I think we still met it because of the annexation, but it's always been, the targets for us have always been historically really low.
But as Issaquah is getting to its maximum, if they're not going to go up higher, they're going to push.
And hopefully they adjust the targets then, you know, and reflect that, but.
Do you know how they get to that? Is that from percentage growth, like everybody else, from the previous years, or do they?
Yeah.
It seems like there was horse trading, the way Mike explained it, and you tell me, this is the way I remember. He was saying that they have targets maybe for the county, but some cities are looking to grow and want more of that, and some cities are not, so they might give some of their growth targets to them. So.
And does that not include annexation?
It does. It does.
So
that counts.
I'm back to Wood River. We're probably already 10 years out already. We're already just absorbing that neighborhood.
Well, John Day's got an annexation somewhere.
Yeah, but I mean, those are standing. That's standing inventory. Just
right immediate.
Add to the count. Isn't this fun?
All right. So, page 7. Jenna made a comment, and you made some comments there. The X's are looking to complete?
Yeah, that's part of the buildable, the build-out analysis.
Okay, so that'll come. Do you know what she meant by the cottage ordinance did this?
Smaller lots.
Yeah, cottage and alternative types of housing. More affordable and other small owner-occupied units. The cottage are required to be not necessarily owner-occupied, but
owner-owned. Suggested the place to go to look at a cottage-type development be on the ridge. Phase 2.
Street cottages. Yeah, they're right off Douglas. And they look like very small, very tightly packed single family homes.
Not my first choice for the concept.
Yeah. I don't think that it's going to
around the Liz, is that around the Montessori school, what you're talking about?
No. That's a new thing. Those are actually townhomes, and I just can't wait.
Those are ugly.
Back in the stack of.
Well, no, they have it. It's a risk management thing. It's an issue, and I look at those, and they have right up against on a retaining wall against a area that fills with water frequently.
Yeah.
And I look at that, and I'm going, what were they thinking? So we'll see in the long term what that means. But no, that's a new type of housing that they've just started putting in there that's actually like townhomes.
Townhomes, narrow streets. I see a fire hazard just waiting to explode there. There's the very tight corners. You couldn't get a yoga ladder around the corner.
There are areas that it's pretty kind of, it's interesting. I've actually seen some where they,
they're probably sprinkling.
Having a hard, actually they probably wouldn't they be. I didn't see them. Normally from the top of the roof, you can see when they actually have the fire divisions in there, and I did not notice that they had those. Mm. So sprinkling because mm-hmm. of how close they are. And the number of units.
I think all multifamily now has to be sprinkled. But
and that helps. But
we do have an application in for a cottage, our first cottage development. So
yeah, I didn't spot it. So you say it's off Douglas?
Yeah, it's off Douglas. And the part of the problem is I don't think it stands out up there mm-hmm. as, hey, these are the cottages, because it really doesn't look that different from everything else. It's kind of hidden in there. Mm. And it doesn't announce these are the Baker Street cottages. Mm-hmm. It's just the name for that section off Douglas. I found some photos that I can get over to you that show what they look like. The only way you can really tell is to pull them up on King County and look at the plat, the legal name, to know that it, because it says Baker Street cottages.
Hmm. I think it's worth mentioning again, but the cottage concept, go back way back when, the grandma had a cottage on the hill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That idea has evolved into cottage housing, and then cottage housing, and I want to go back to the early mid-90s here when it kind of got its foothold. It got traction because they were taking on hard to build on dirt, mm-hmm. steep slope, wetland setbacks, whatever, and they were saying, hey, I'll take this 10-acre parcel that you might be able to build five houses on, and I'll tightly pack 10, but I'm going to put my parking away from individual houses. Yeah. I'm going to build meandering walkways.
They call them light era were courts.
Okay.
You'd have a central walkway, and they'd go off and branch off to like four individual little houses, two-bedroom houses on each side of the central, yep. And then they had a shelter for the cars in the back of all that. That's we call those courts. Is that a cottage house today? Is that what a cottage is?
Not the ones up on the ridge.
Yeah, I was going to say, closer to that than, at least the concept I'm always talking about is not what's on Snoqualmie Ridge. Mm-hmm. That's a branding exercise there, mm-hmm. more than it is the concept.
It's so, okay, we're going to put you so that you can reach out the window and touch your neighbor, yeah, yeah. Shake hands, and call it something cool so that you don't yeah. feel like you're that close.
Back to our housing types, anything on page 7, the mixed-use development is the only other section. And let's turn to page 8, some changes there.
Yes, I keep my eyes open about mixed-use. I find it, if I was a retired person, I would find that very attractive to have commercial on the bottom floor. Gives it, in terms of, as a community, it makes it for an interesting walk. Come out of your place and then walk around and see all the commercial, do whatever you want to do there. But it's just not going down to a street with nothing to occupy your mind. So I find that interesting in many places. I see where we were talking about that before. You were bringing it up too, Gary, I think, on mm-hmm. that strip up North Bend Way, how that would be very interesting to have first floor merchant activity in there. I'm evolving when it comes to housing, you guys, okay? And I'm looking at different things, and I'm thinking that all those make up for a variety, which makes it for a community to be worth be located in.
Mm-hmm. I think the question on that, though, is where is the best place to put it? And the downtown core, where you have closer proximity to a lot of services, probably makes more sense.
It does, but if I look at flood and traffic patterns, then I say no.
I'm right there with the flood, too, but it becomes kind of this balance of where's the best place to put it. And if you have housing on the upper mm-hmm. floor, it does mitigate some of the risk to life and limb for humans mm-hmm. Because the businesses, you would assume, can absorb it mm-hmm. a bit better.
Yeah,
I would see, in the downtown core, you're talking about higher density mm-hmm. residential than you are in the... Mm-hmm. In the first layer, in the first circle, outside of it, mm-hmm. I think that having commercial on the first level in many areas keep people closer to home. They don't have to drive into the downtown core to get to a snack shop. Mm-hmm. But so you're going to have more density in the downtown core that's going to really require commercial. Mm-hmm. But the other end of it is you have these high density pockets that can use first level commercial, just for conveniences. I don't see them competing. I just see them being an availability issue for, especially if a town is spread out the way we're going to be.
Where would we create an overlay? In what section would that fall?
That's in our zoning code in 18. Yeah.
Just change the thing. Don't give it an overlay. Make it different.
All right. We can change
it. Whole new zone. Get, call it the Gary zone.
We had a public, we had public comment about our HDR being out of date. Okay, moving on. Page 8. Mix of housing types and strategies. Any comments or changes to page 8?
Well, this seems to be the essay that got us into that trouble with having so many mini pocket parks that we weren't having room for houses and,
yeah,
and yards. And here we are.
Yeah, it's
putting it right back in there.
Yeah. I don't know if this is too grand a statement, but I believe it's borne out that the pocket park concept is a failure in so many levels.
It is.
In the neighborhoods that they exist, the people who live there either don't know they're there or consider them a nuisance that's not taken care of well enough because the homeowners association doesn't team up on that. And then the second level of the park concept, which is exemplified by this picture we're looking at on page 8. If I recall correctly, I think it was John Day who was here who pointed out that his customers would far have preferred to have a slightly larger lot than to all of them have a joint visual of this big open space in there across their street.
What you have, you're looking at is a bunch of playground apparatus.
Yeah.
Instead of some viewscape in this
night. And furthermore, point out that the people who use the park many times are not residents. The residents have their own playset and their own backyard for their children. So people from outside the neighborhood come to use the available facilities. It's just kind of a wacky deal.
So are you looking to strike any language based on that discussion?
I'm happy to. I think I've got my critical hat on, but not my creative hat on right now, Gary.
Yeah.
I see a problem I haven't found a fix yet.
Using the specifics, saying you're going to do mini parks gets us into trouble.
Yeah.
Because then it's a, what if we want to actually gear that money toward
fee and lieu, or
the where they're trying to raise the funds to buy the railroad grade to improve, and that's going to improve access and walking areas out to the newly annexed parts of the city. So getting rid of that, I'm on board for
Okay, we can work on that.
Do we need to just remove new or mini and just keep, and you know, creation of parks supported by the homeowners? So that means that their fees going towards a park, to me, you could just take out two words.
And then it says, comma.
Responsible for maintenance of it.
And then it does say, comma, expansion of existing parks or fee in lieu option.
You know, they're really playgrounds, not parks. When you think about a park, it's a place to regenerate and relax and dream, if you want to use a phrase like that. But those are playgrounds. That's what they are. So you're not finding anybody out there using them as a park, typical, where you'd be away from the roads, away from the hustle and bustle, which is always around those things.
Well, I've heard good feedback on the Cedar Falls. I think that neighborhood really likes the parks.
Mm-hmm. And it's brand new. And I think Jenna said the development next to theirs that didn't want any connectivity now was asking for a trail through so they could use that park.
I think it depends on it. And then it becomes an issue of who's actually responsible for maintaining the park.
Which one of the parks in Cedar Falls? You've got six of them.
Well, and it's whether or not the HOA is having to maintain those, or is it legally responsible for it. It creates a situation where if they are in fact legally responsible, they're not going to want outside individuals coming in and using that park. Mm-hmm. It makes more sense to have that money going to
are those
things for the community.
Parks deeded to the city or no?
Cedar Falls, Forester Woods, those are private for kind of a strange reason a little bit, we have Sideview Park, the Sideview neighborhood, but then John Day's Tannerwood, because of its size, the city does maintain the big one, and then the homeowners has the smaller one at the back. So typically we want the homeowners to, but I think for that sentence you could say the provision of adequate parking, and you could just strike, you know, and then go to expansion of existing parks, or fee in lieu option, or fee in lieu option, or homeowner parks for smaller plats. I mean, our code breaks it out into size, and if it's a small plat, there's a fee in lieu. If it's a medium plat, it is a mini park, or it's scalable. So,
it's the Sideview Estates, Jamie, that has a beautiful meandering park through the drainage area.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that. That's a very well thought out park where people can use any part of it and feel that they've gotten away from their home for a while without actually being on a trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that a big chunk of that is dedicated to the shoreline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
also, that gives it a very large park feeling to it.
Yep, yeah.
And the lot sizes are bigger there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that's what people were talking about, that we're losing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like getting tighter and smaller in the park, lot sizes.
Mm-hmm.
The mini parks, for me, really recall some of the things that I see up on the ridge that are distinctly different from what I expect to see in North Bend, because it's very much what you see up there, these little tiny parks that everything starts to fall apart after a while. They're not well maintained. They might get mowed periodically, but it creates a different feel from what I expect with the big parks that we have. And I'm spoiled. I have E.J. Roberts Park right there.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got one. I might be a little biased, but one of the best parks out here.
Now, I guess, if you had a mom who had maybe two or three youngsters at home, who would find that an escape valve to get them out of the house into an area close by where they could hang on a bar and swing on a swing. But when they get to be more like 6 or 7, they're tired of that little park.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have something bigger to play on.
Mm-hmm.
So
or they want to be able to fly a kite, or they want to be able to throw a football around.
The imagination is bigger than those little playgrounds.
I think you're good that
I got the gist of it, yeah.
So right below the picture, the second sentence of the first paragraph, recent trends show a continued reduction in the size of household and changes in the preference for housing types.
Mm-hmm.
What are we referencing there?
You mean what data?
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be a great place for a little table, U.S. census, whatever.
Okay. Or just the number, you know, maybe a, you know, household size in this year used to be this, and now it's trending to this. Again, you know, we might be a little bit of an odd duck up here, but
I don't know if it's necessary if it's, 1.8 to 1.7.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit, Gary, you always do this to me because you've made me focus. But that sentence, the ending sentence of that is almost offensive. It suggests that diverse people want to have different houses. I think everybody wants the same kind of house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want a house that's comfortable and livable. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that if you have a diverse population, you're going to have a diverse collection of residences. That's not axiomatic. I think that in the Northwest we have a Northwest type house, and in the Southeast you have a South with a brand of, you know, things that have grown up through the tenure of the community. That's what people want. I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm going to swallow my words right now. Cause every time I see a stucco house, I see somebody who's from Southern California doesn't believe that wood makes a good exterior source.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're finding a lot of stucco homes in older neighborhoods that where you have some tear downs and people buy them, and they come in and build stucco. It drives me crazy.
And it's usually not stucco, it's usually ifs. this exterior insulation finish system. Which
but that's what they're used to. And diverse, and maybe this is what this says, is that a diverse population brings with them their culture, and they want to have a house that they're used to. But aesthetically, what is that going to do to the overall neighborhood? It's going to really create an interesting mix and a hodgepodge at the same time.
Well, when you look at the thing is on this one, when you look at the comments, I think that sentence doesn't really say what it's trying to say, which is that we actually have, they're really talking about the elderly units or people that want smaller units, but it doesn't come across that way in the way that it's working.
I don't know how you would like it to be worded differently, but I would like to change the word in the last sentence of the first paragraph under the picture, the word choices to options, housing options available instead of choices. I think that's what we're all trying to create as we do different.
It has a different spin to it, I think, a more positive spin. But I just diversity drives I don't know if that's trying to be politically correct or if it's just
I don't know if you need to say population. I mean, you're talking about a diversity of housing options. I don't know that you need to bring
I think the authors here are trying to reflect that the fact that North Bend is no longer primarily Caucasian. There's a diversity of both you put diversity in the center of a circle, you're going to have 15 different definitions of diversity, including gender differences, ethnic differences, diverse. It's what the universe is made of, I guess.
I think you can strike the whole sentence.
But it's almost saying the obvious, isn't it?
You can't talk about diversity and then define it without getting in trouble.
Right. No, actually, strike. Well, look at the paragraph after it, because I think that you might be onto something with just getting rid of the whole thing. Because you just go from diversity in the population should be reflected in the housing options available to the North Bend citizens to respond to the expected changes in the population lifestyles and the rising cost of housing. Is that entire paragraph even necessary? Because it's essentially repeated with more detail below.
I do like the sentence. I don't know if we want to just stick with the word diversity, call it housing or household diversity in our population should be reflected in the housing options available to North Bend citizens. I see that as something that is guiding us in our planning or future planning commissions, that we are acknowledging that diversity and we're planning for it. The next paragraph, I think, is extra data about...
Yeah. Trying to define it.
Yeah.
So the first sentence right on the photograph covers it, ending in the word types.
This is probably a paragraph that's yielding to a Chamber of Commerce argument. They're trying to draw people from other parts of the community into North Bend, where we have a diverse, eclectic here.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, here it looks like single-person household doesn't include the second person under age 18.
I am not correct on the definition.
I don't think there is a good one. Is it a household if they only live there half of the year?
I'll find out.
I don't know.
How some people
could
define it.
Somebody define household for
you,
Jimmy.
Yeah.
And how it's used here.
Trust me, Trilogy, your sense of neighborhood is dramatically different than if you're in Sideview, because Trilogy's full of folks that aren't there most of the time. And that's just demographics changes in our society. But I don't think you can go and spell it out that, how old are they and who's living where and try to figure that out if the building code or anyplace else. Interesting, though. Should pay attention to it. But I think the first sentence here that Lynn added, is enough. The first sentence. Don't need to bring in the other stuff. That's about 2 cents.
I agree with you. Just link up that first sentence with the second paragraph. Make it one paragraph.
Or even not use the second paragraph. Because we've still got the one beyond that that's been in print from before.
Right, which I think brings into what are we talking about different housing types and what is the goal? And it brings it back into what the focus of the city of North Bend is. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get us off that track if you're still on it. But the question I'm having now is, one thing that when mixed use comes up, when connectivity comes up, I always say this the same way, North Bend is incredibly unique in how much trails system, how many trails that we have here. And it's crazy that if we don't really pay attention to make new development connect to those, mm-hmm. either through their backyard corridors or however they're able connect to our trails.
Are you saying that should be one of our housing strategies?
It's really
unique to North Bend, and we should put it in somewhere.
So am I hearing that the two blue highlighted paragraphs underneath the image are not necessary?
Except for the first sentence.
As North Bend's population changes, so will its demographic profile.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that feeds right into the existing paragraph.
Go to the existing paragraph.
Okay.
Which, by the way, the existing paragraph, the last sentence, comes to this objective will be achieved in part by the creation of relation to integrated systems of open spaces, bikeways,
mm-hmm.
pedestrian paths.
Connect.
So I think, just to be sure and clear, you guys are looking at a cleaned up version. So the track change version, I think she said she could email to you. So. I think some of this is highlighted because there's comments on it, but, yeah.
Now, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Everybody, having the Rotary, I'm proud of it. And a Rotary friend of mine, Chief McCulley, is in the same group. And I always like to ask him over a cup of coffee, if all these trails pose a threat to people in the community, because those trails become walkways to predators, whatnot. They're easy to hide in, easy to hide around. I wondered if all these trails should be regarded as something different, just fun things to walk.
Well, I appreciate your comment. I guess from my perspective, it's nothing that you would want to do away with, but more provide markers and guidance and ways to be responsible on the trail. I know I suggested to Mike McCarty a while back that along the trails we have markers or indicators, so if you do need assistance, you can call out where you are, mm-hmm. and that would be something that the police can identify with.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to do that. Provide
most
safe
North Bend residents are packing, so that won't be an issue.
No, we have Main Street.
Were there any comments on the top of page 8? I guess that's having to do with single family to multifamily ratio. That's not the owner occupied versus rental, but I think that's still a good.
Can we get confirmation of that when we get our housing analysis?
Kind
of
see where
if we have that mix.
Based on
what we changed in zoning?
For build out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What will build out say about this? Yeah.
Because we want to be.
Yep. We want to make sure.
We're hitting our target.
We're.
I'm sure.
Consistent across the board?
On that somewhere. Okay. I'm moving on to page.
That same one, Gary. Sorry. Back to this mm-hmm. paragraph you brought up. I made a note, didn't bring it up just now. The last sentence of the top paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
To further encourage affordability and diversity, the city identified a new cottage residential.
Mm-hmm.
I was there in the very early stages of talking about cottage residential, and the word affordability was not in the conversation. So I.
Way in the back of. Yeah, because Councilmember Rosen remembers affordability.
Yeah, I know.
So.
I'm going to recommend we strike the word affordability from that sentence.
Second. Any opposed?
Councilmember Rosa can bring it back in if he wishes.
Okay.
I don't want the bot. Mm-hmm. It could be a typo, but I don't want to insult my own intelligence. What's the word? The last paragraph there. Environs?
Environs?
So that's not an actual word.
No, it is.
Talk to me.
See if I can explain this. It is actually a word. It's a shortened word that relates to your environment.
Okay.
Your environs. It is actually a word.
Okay.
The dictionary.
I didn't take the time to look it up.
The dictionary in my brain.
I just heard a word. I just heard a word coined this evening from our comments from the public speaker. The word was optimizing. I think I'm going to look that up in Google when I get home.
Wasn't there a move for government to go to simple speak or simple?
Yeah, we can.
It's more accurate. I would reflect that it is a bit of an archaic term.
Oh, yeah. Archaic terms.
Okay.
That makes it attractive for us.
Oh.
not the rest of them.
Yeah.
Okay, affordable housing on page 9.
Actually, the top paragraph, which references mobile homes, which is an expression of still manufactured mobile home strategies, where apparently environs is appropriate to use. The last sentence of top of our page 9, mobile home parks must demonstrate that they are safe and have adequate utilities and city amenities. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering why that was ever needed to be said.
Yeah, I noticed that too and thought it might be a little bit odd.
Was there a right?
I don't know why it was there historically, but our codes would require that.
You know,
it's like the self-evident statement, right? Mm. I'm trying to understand. Maybe there was something else.
I think there's a history that might explain why that was there. Mm-hmm. Having to do with more than one mobile home development that was not present necessarily within the city limits that I think was in, it is now, that there were some issues.
Yeah. I'd be okay
put in there to make sure.
Leaving that high-level thought here and looking to the code to find out what utilities and what amenities.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is high-level.
Is the difference between mobile home park and trailer parks, is it not?
Mm-mm. Well,
no.
Is there a definition only for manufactured home?
Is a mobile home community that's right there on the curve on Bendigo Way, is that a mobile home or is that a... That's a trailer park.
There's not really a differentiation between the two, but it's what we would have called a trailer park.
Yeah. And that happens when you have a mix and match of trailers moving in and out. You rent the space, maybe long or short term, but you get that.
Various ages.
Various. And so you also get people who do not hook up properly, and then it just becomes.
Or aren't tied down, which is a major. Mm-hmm. Major
I think that's what this is addressing. That even if you have something that you might call a trailer park, you've got to have a minimum code.
They're treated the same, though, as a mobile home. It's the same thing. It's just
the mobile home park. I visualize wider streets and prepared gardens for each space and some continuity.
Kind of finished look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas a trailer park is
all in dug in. It's
kind of like Fall City.
God love them, you know. When we used to have a lot of transient work here, where they'd come in for the summer and work and come out, that's where they found their place to live, and they had to have a place. They were bringing their home on their back. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean to demean those people because they follow where their work is.
I think that we see less of that now, though, that particularly two of the major parks that are now within the city limits have pursued for at least a decade a very concerted effort to replace older manufactured homes with newer models, making sure that everybody is maintaining a certain standard. And in fact, one of them, I think they completely replaced everything brand new. That man should be 15 years ago. So it's sort of a different thing. We have some remnants of that.
We have actually a very unique circumstance in the mobile home, in the fact that the land is held entitled to a single party, and that same party owns the buildings, the mobile homes that are attached.
So they're just rented, yeah.
So it's truly like an apartment building concept.
For one of them.
That's
one
not
of them.
Normal.
No, it isn't. They normally, it's space, you might have them owning the land and it's space rent, but typically the actual homes are owned by the individuals. So that one is...
So that means one person is then maintaining all those individual...
In theory.
Yeah.
The Meadows, I think it's called?
Oh, I didn't remember the name earlier, but yeah, that was all rentals.
I was trying to answer your question, why was that even needed? I think that's probably still...
The
vision
of mobile piece of it is less mobile today than with this.
Affordable housing on page 9 goes to whether or not we will address a margin of or address the individuals that fall under the poverty level with some housing options that are deemed affordable in our city. And I'm struggling with understanding where we've been and where we're going and how that story relates to, do we have enough of a population to warrant a structure or another structure in our city? And so if I only see 200 people, do we not only have enough of those rooms, or should we look at 10 years out and see the trend from 200 going to 800, and where should those fit? So that's where I'm stuck in.
Build it and they will come, is my answer.
But I think there's another question, which is we have an aging population. Mm-hmm. And there becomes a second question, 10 years out now, how many people who currently live here are going to reach a point where they have to sell their homes, where they're dependent on peaceful social security check and become part of that population that is relatively small right now? Do we want to end up creating a situation by not having enough of housing for them, where they then have to move outside of the community that they've lived in their entire lives? So the number that we need to know is how many people do we have in that age group?
Well, isn't that more of if that's all of our parents maybe concerned at some point, right? That seems to be more of a...
Come on, I'm an age bracket.
I was thinking of your parents.
I'm in my mid-70s. I'm not really thinking about it.
In the 2000...
Well, it's not...
The 2010 U.S. Census data for North Bend, in the 60 to 64-year bracket, we had 138 people. In 65 to 69, 78 people. In 70 to 74, 67. In 75 to 79, we had 58. And 80 to 84, 51. And 85 years and over, 60 people.
I'm not surprised.
So you're talking 400 people that are 60 plus. Right now.
Right now.
What year was that?
2010.
Okay, so.
So in the 50 to 59, we have another 238 plus 171, let's call it 400 people going to that bracket.
Right.
That's probably true across the country, the same ratio.
And it's not necessarily that they're going to need subsidized housing. Right now we have the transitional center that's primarily for people that need medical assistance or very low-income individuals that need long-term care. Mm-hmm. And Red Oak is the only really paid retirement living community.
So, Jamie, you're first.
This is a brainstorm. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll start something. Grandparents age, and as they get older, usually there's only one left standing in the house. Mm-hmm. The reason they leave, usually, can't afford to pay the taxes because their inner city price values have gone up, right?
Well, all of a sudden they can't swing it. File with the county for exemptions, which there's not enough that know they can do that.
Or they can't maintain it physically, keep the property up. Mm-hmm. So along with this, Jamie, along with this idea of infill developer benefits for the construction of new homes, maybe we have some little footnote through our code that gives the builder some incentive to provide services to those folks who can't fix their house. That sounds kind of crazy.
Well,
but it's like the Habitat Humanity scenario.
Only it keeps people in their houses longer.
Making people able to stay in their homes. Along with, I know this is a county slash state scenario, but along with the tax, just kind of a given. They don't have to appeal to go to the board if they're a certain age and they're living on their own in a house, family home they've had for 20 years. Flat off, your taxes are X. You know, the Prop 13 in California did that. Catch 22, of course, is now they can't afford to move because they can't afford to own where they would move to. But just throw that in the room and maybe it'll come back.
Well, I think the maintenance applies to, you know, younger kids going to school, too, who don't have the time to do maintenance. So when you're talking about a facility, you might be able to serve.
To hell with that.
Well, they're probably going to be working tough, right?
You're talking to a UPS kid. And no sympathy.
So when you said builders that are coming in, new projects in town, commercial or residential, or and you said provide incentives for them to help with some of the existing housing stock, or?
It wouldn't be hard. Yes, existing housing. So that fits easily with the infills conversation, right?
Yep.
Instead of tearing down Grandma Betty's house,
yep.
Maybe we got some facility through our permit process in developing certain areas, new construction stuff, to tie back to making sure she can stay there rather than pretty much ensuring she's not.
The only way to really do it, or one of the ways, is an impact fee. You know, our impact fees, like you said, are already
well, I'm almost thinking that would be not good because bureaucrats hire more to manage the money they just got.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to go there. But something that, again, this is just me throwing this out for the first time, along with our talk about infill, we're trying to protect the structure and the consistency of neighborhoods. It's something that feeds it back the new page for the
kind
of thing.
Sweat equity for general contractors, send your crew over and clean up
this
house, and we'll knock a little bit off. And I like the idea of helping people because, believe me, I got a list of people.
Yeah.
But it becomes something that, unfortunately, I think the way that we're organized becomes something for nonprofits to step in and handle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whether or not.
So we do that.
We could legally do that, I think, would be it.
No. Like I said, the Habitat Humanity concept, it's nonprofit related.
Mm-hmm.
If what Snoqualmie Ridge has done and so many other Issaquah Highlands has done, they've basically told developers, hey, look, we're going to give you 20% of your inventory that you're getting ready to build has to be at this price point.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy in the $700,000 house lives next to a guy in a $400,000 house in order for the developer to develop all the land to play that game.
To say, hey,
crazy.
We'll let you build another $700,000 house if you spend X amount of money helping houses.
Or no, you just have a cheaper house next door. He's going to build it. Just means all the spec level just dropped, which messes up the neighborhood concept because you have such a different forced break.
I was actually running with the idea of how do you incentivize your GC to help Betty fix up her house or fix her roof. And that's by saying, okay, spend X amount of time and money doing this, and we'll let you build another house.
In our next meeting, I'm going to miss the February one, but in the next meeting, I'll come up with some more details.
My issue with that is there has to be then some controls to prevent the abuse and the fraud.
Right. To make sure they actually do the work.
Your suggestion about nonprofits might provide an easy way for them to manage it, and we just provide enough money through our permitting process fees that link together the need with the provider.
You know, most seniors that I know, and think back about their former mother, father-in-law, their Iowa, and they wouldn't accept help. They wouldn't accept help. They would cut back, adjust their lifestyle, but they wouldn't go out and really ask for help. They were too proud to do that. And I think that's a hallmark of older people. They're determined to maintain themselves at the risk of maybe themselves because they won't go out. So these good ideas are intentional. I tried to have them come up here. Sell your house and sell it. Come on up and get in that community outside of Issaquah here. I actually took them on a tour. It's And I got my head bit off. Mm. Don't you dare try to do this for us. Mm. We'll do it for ourselves. You know? And that's what I learned. You know, they would appreciate just being left alone and just they will figure it out. But I did fine, you know, no question about that. But I understand the mindset of elderly people. The well-meaning community wanted to build them up, they resent that. Mm-hmm. They may resent it. Not all of them, a lot of them would appreciate it, but most of them would come to feel resentment, not joy. So we need to find ways where they can take on things for themselves to let them live there, rather than doing something for them.
So if that's all a good thought, without anything to put down.
Moves along, sir.
Affordable housing. Looking at then a need for 400 to 600 people, looking at the HDR zone which was proposed, mm-hmm. how do we then say somewhere in that large part of HDR we want to provide affordable housing? I don't know. But that to me would make an easy designation. I don't.
To me, that's not a very difficult thing. You have four separate units. One of them would be in the formal category. It's partially subsidized.
But how in our code?
Mm-hmm.
I don't
make
know.
Sure that they maintain that.
Yeah.
Or is it easier
and who to subsidizes
to,
it?
Right.
You know.
Or is it easier to create it so that the entire, you know, you have a building that's all similar to what we've got right now with the Mount Sinai.
Mm-hmm.
The one the senior center owns. Or there's another one that I think is Section 8 housing. I don't know what it's called. How do you tell them to do it? Having one unit out of four. It's really hard to put that on somebody's title and maintain that. So they stick with it for a year, and then all of a sudden it's up to market rates with everything else. And you don't have that consistency.
Well, no, it'd be in the business plan of the owner of the four apartment units. That would be owned by an organization.
Maybe the city should just build them.
Their business strategy would be to have, as they
speak Russian,
an affordable housing structure.
Right. But then there's the idea of enforcement of how do we make them maintain them. You can have it in the plan that that's what they're going to do. They come in and they build it, and then in their business plan they discover that they can rent that particular unit for twice what they were getting during affordable housing. What is the enforcement provision that requires them to actually keep that going? A lot easier to have the entire building.
It's all the permit. They're permit.
So that's where I'm
based upon they do this.
I'm thinking, and Jamie, this would be for you guys to help us with, is somewhere in the HDR zone that we make some provision if you're going to, I don't know, if we can do it somehow, that one building, that is a large scale that could accommodate a few hundred residents.
Well, is it like a density bonus? Maybe you could get a density bonus if you have a portion that is
if you build one
subsidized.
Of the structures for subsidized.
So I'm just going to go out and say what I think on this. What happens if we just scratch the whole idea of affordable housing? Don't even address it. What if we don't touch it? What happens?
Well, we can have our wishy-washy language of encouraging and allowing and, like I said, just leave it at that. You can.
I don't think I've seen a good example anywhere that doesn't feel forced, that the neighbors appreciate each other, that the section of the neighborhood that has received whatever the discount is doesn't stand out when you drive through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan. I don't know how to get around it. I like the concept, the feel, it's a feel-good move, but I haven't seen it work anywhere. And to the point that we might get into talking numbers and percentages and overlays and try to make it work, that's what it looked like, I think, at the end of the day. Subsidized from the ground up. And if it's done on the deed, boy, that's a blight that could be there for a long, long time. So I first started reading this, and I'm like, I don't know how I, because every paragraph, every sentence has the word affordable housing in it. Throw the whole thing out.
Well, our history is, our history, our been as we've always been, but the whole cost of freedom.
Sure. I'm all for that.
I was struggling to rise into the middle class, upper middle, within the valley cities.
Yeah, but I don't think you can but do that without some, you've got to create an equity.
But maybe, I'm trying to say, it may be part of our community culture to attract people who are on the lower end of the scale in some ways and embrace that.
Wouldn't you do that by attracting the businesses that they would work for first?
Yes, sir.
Well, when you say businesses, you know, if I take my son to swimming class, there's an instructor there that gets paid. If I go out to eat, there's a waiter at the restaurant. If I go out for a drink, there's a bartender. Those are all jobs that make under $40,000 a year. Why couldn't they live in my community? Why can't I see them at QFC? So,
because they've chosen the path that they're on?
But should that be a penalty, or should there be a housing that addresses all income types?
This could be like all night long, and I'm happy to do that, because I'm passionate about the idea. I really don't believe
now,
you can...
We're not talking about subsidy, but just a type of housing.
Is this a straw man discussion right now, generally? To not have affordable housing almost seems to be...
I think it's impossible for a bureaucratic entity to make it happen unless you're going to basically whatever level of subsidy at the point of giving it away. That's the only way that we can make that happen. The market, however, if the owner of the restaurant likes his bartender, he's going to rent him a place right next door to the bar. That's the market. That's not the government saying, let's give this guy
a place to live. We're putting limits on where you put affordable housing. We can only build in flood zone. We can't build in slide-prone areas for safety issues. So all the land's left is the high-cost land, and you have to put something on it. So maybe you're talking about basically...
I don't know if it's high-cost land. I think that's the land that's available. The cost of it's going to be dependent on who builds on it.
The land who poses problems for structures usually has a low rent. You know, you put the low rent by the train tracks.
Or the older structures.
Yeah.
That create
low and they
rent.
Just become the low rent community because they're around undesirable elements.
That we just talked about, our modular home parks, trailer parks, that's probably the entry level that you could talk about. You know, they're 800, 1,000 square feet, whatever they are, for $1,000, $1,500 a month, that range probably, maybe less.
Well, there's all those apartments or townhomes over by Sideview.
Right. I just think it's conceptually, it sounds good, but it has proven, and I think will always prove, to be a bad idea. So many stories of folks who got into, not Habitat, but there's another... They go out and they build apartment buildings. People can only live there for a year and they have to get out. But every one of the tenants stays there for a year because it's the cheapest place on the planet to live. Mm-hmm. So you disincentivize people to go do their best when you give them something. That's my basic premise. So, like I said, I could go on all night. I'll stop here.
Okay, so any changes on page 9?
I'll be scratching the page.
I like to give this a cut test, though. It's radical to talk about not providing for affordable housing in a modern day community, but we shouldn't be so accepting of that concept either.
Keep a family down, give them a benefit they can't replace somewhere else.
Well, on page 9 it says, we currently have 90 units of subsidized housing in the downtown area. Mm-hmm. So that's the Snow Ridge Apartments, okay, in Cascade Park, and Sideview Court. So they get federal, state, and King County housing assistance programs. So under that, the city is not actively doing anything. There's nothing for permits to be paid for. There's no builder pay. It's all under federal, state, and county. If that works now, leave it as is.
That's subsidized to the members of the household. Mm-hmm. I'm subsidizing the household. Right? Yeah. You see that same way?
Zoning incentives on page 10. Is this new, or do you know, Jamie?
No, I think a lot of this was in here already.
This is some of the nicest affordable housing you're going to see. This is beautiful stuff. And so what were some of the incentives to build this community?
Cascade Park, you're referring to?
Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, I think we're lucky to have some of the options that we do. I know down in Carnation, you know, they have the senior center down there, but they have really no senior housing.
Yeah.
In the whole Lower Valley. But right there, that last sentence under zoning incentives, amendments to the zoning codes can also provide new mechanisms for development to contribute to low-income housing trust funds.
Those mechanisms are, Jim, what would you?
Yeah.
What kind of mechanism would you need to create affordable housing?
I'd stop with the word affordable housing because I don't know what that means.
Okay. What is this zoning incentive?
There's a trust fund, like
what
a low-income
mechanism,
housing trust fund.
Yeah, it's a legal thing, isn't it?
Well, aren't our tax dollars already kind of going that direction in different ways already?
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think like
state and federal income taxes are fed down the line.
No, I think this is more aligned along the lines of what Jamie was saying. So if you contribute to this fund, then we'll allow you to create an X amount more density or more units or maybe not pay to this park fund or something.
Well, these units aren't necessarily any smaller than any other apartment in the community. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, they aren't smaller in terms of living space.
No.
Is that what you're talking about?
No, no. But maybe their setbacks 5 feet shorter than what it should be from the street.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you're trading density basically for the subsidy.
Yeah.
That's one way to do it.
One way.
Yeah, that's a common way, right? I mean, that's
density bonus.
We'll get three more units in the space.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're giving up some money. But then the question that's begged in that conversation is the developer's looking at the site. Spec level. Well, if you can squeeze some smaller spaces in, but he's going to change the spec level and what he's doing because now they're tighter and smaller. So it doesn't really work out that simple.
Maybe. Or maybe they're just more. I'd just say leave it at mechanisms. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the art in their planning. Okay, I have no changes for page 10. Anybody? Moving on to page 11. Well, we were turning right along until this.
So. You're not totally in place. I'm wondering, is this aging, is this terminology, are we creating another group, another class of folks to define and build accordingly? Is that where this aging in place term is coming from? Or is that just Lynn starting the conversation?
I think it is kind of a new coined phrase. So this is talking about the boomers.
Yeah, aren't there a lot of communities? But, I see those ads, shake something, come live in my, it's your 60-year-older.
No, I think that the people, it's the way that they're choosing to live. It's not a new group of people. So.
And it's creating a plan that allows them to continue to live in the community.
communities that they're in as they move through the different stages of aging, whether it's that point that they can live in their home or the point that they need some form of assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you a funny story? Driving down the street with my grandmother, and this has been 20 years ago, she was in her early 90s, driving down the street in the neighborhood she chose to live in. She picked it out because she had a girlfriend who was 10 years younger than her, living there. The neighborhood had been totally planned. This is in Florida. Planned PUD on steroids. Golf course, single-family houses, three-car garage, the third car in a golf court bay. The next block up, the next street level was condos. The next block up was assisted living, housing. And then there was the church and the graveyard, literally. And my grandmother said, I want to live here. I only want to move once. To the graveyard.
And she did.
So that's, I think there are lots of folks who think that way. You know, I want to live where I'm going to live for the rest of my life.
In my community,
again.
Yeah.
But how do, that's, to me, that's an odd topic to talk about when you're talking about planning land use. That doesn't.
I think it speaks to diversity in housing stock, right?
Right.
Yeah.
If you look at Providence Point, that has a mix of condos, a little community hall, and then those that need more assisted living, where they actually have some that's helping them, and they even have where they need more medical care. So it's kind of a, and I've seen these more. I have an aunt who lived for 30 years in a similar situation in Charlotte, North Carolina, where when she first moved in, she was in a little cottage out on the ground, had a couple rooms, and she moved into the main building, and then they moved her into the, basically the hospital ward when she hit 110. They just decided they were going to move her up there, even though she wasn't ready yet. And having all of that there, it allowed her to stay. I'm sure it was bigger, obviously, North Bend, but it allowed her to stay where she had lived most of her life.
It would be great if we could have a Providence Point here.
I don't know that we can do that, but you know, right now, the
smaller
fact,
scale.
We just have two.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of demand for Red Oak for people who want to stay in the community. Because they just don't quite stable enough.
You walked right into the subject and you didn't have your own answer. We need a bigger graveyard in this.
Yes.
Well, that's another issue.
And, because that is.
Or do what they used to do, stack them.
Yep. Not a lot of ground.
There's a gentleman who's been coming in. He has plans. He wants to develop an assisted or senior complex community.
Yeah. They're. Weyerhaeuser Real Estate lost out on the National Cemetery. They were going to put it on Rattlesnake, where the winery used to be.
Yep.
Now it's considered to be the National Cemetery spot until they chose the one down in Basin Valley.
Interesting.
But there's a lot of people that have gone into the area to be around the veterans, retirees. They see themselves going there.
Yep.
And that is the genesis of a lot of movement into that area, was that National Cemetery.
Yep. Yep. Interesting.
So we need a better cemetery.
I'm in. When's the last time anybody's been down to Red Stone, by the way? The one we have.
I'm down there frequently. My grandparents and great grandparents are very good.
Yeah, but they are.
Yeah. I didn't notice them. No offense. But I
find the tree, go this way, walk over. They're right.
Yeah. Just takes you back in time though.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you how about I get on the subject?
I don't know.
You,
sorry.
But a land use plan should plan for a cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where is it? On our diamond
process. We don't have for a cemetery.
But we have one, though.
I guess I have some questions about it because I had not realized until recently it's not endowed because it was started before the state required that cemeteries be endowed. And I was talking to someone recently that said she was trying to get hold of whoever was responsible because she wanted to put her father there and couldn't find anybody that would. She was directed to Flint House and they said that they took care of it for a year and that they were no longer managing it. So
who's taking care of the grounds?
I don't know. So there's a family, I think, that's all the taxes are being paid, the license is up. And some of the family still lives in the area. I actually just got a phone number and called
him yet to say, do you know what's going on?
But before we build everything with houses, shouldn't we be thinking about saving about a 5-acre chunk for a cemetery in the future?
Where are we going to put that? Then it becomes who's going to take care of it, who's going to
come. I don't know. I plan to be on Mars.
It's a business. You know, mortuary on site is a business.
I think it was originally, that space was originally donated by Denny Fury's grandmother.
Something was priced me that way, too.
Yeah, for that. So it has a lot of history in our area.
Yes, it does.
But it's really small.
Is it
full?
I don't think so. It isn't. And there are other things. They could have a columbarium there for... There are ways to expand that to allow more use. You could have somebody's active.
Like a hospital. You're talking about a hospital, province, an ending point, cemetery, and residential communities for the living. That's a whole community. Mm-hmm. We're missing some pieces.
Aging in place. So our goal is to provide the one move. Is that what you want?
No. One-stop shopping.
One-move lifestyle that accommodates some senior desires.
Never have to leave North Bend.
That pretty much encompasses that conversation.
Hotel North Bend.
Without
easy to reach, hard to leave, see?
I
don't want to tell anybody.
Would you like that kind of goal, or
that's maybe this whole topic. I scratch everything. That's my attitude tonight. I'll read the middle paragraph here. But especially people who are frail or have disabilities. My grandmother would roll over in her grave if she called her frail.
I'd say keep it.
Yeah. Elderly friendly? You just pissed off somebody else.
Look, those 60 people who elderly are 85 friendly. And older probably don't
get out of their homes very much. Though our transport program that they have is helping. They at least get to go to the store. We have some isolated communities that aren't within the city limits that have a number of those 85 and older living in them. And they don't get out very at all. I kind of lady that feeds the raccoons because she at least has someone to talk to every day.
Yeah, I haven't traveled on it at all, but I would be willing to suggest that the Valley Transportation bus takes a lot of seniors from Red Oak just around for a ride.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Just take them to Duval and get out, walk around, pick them up, take them back. Mm-hmm. Those local transportation units are important to the seniors who are stuck. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get on. It's cheap, a buck. Takes them to Duval and back.
You haven't heard about the happy hour shuffle?
Oh,
one of the drivers explained to me that he used to consistently pick a couple of those folks up and drop them off so they could walk into the pub, the bar.
Oh, yeah. Funny.
And he'd drop a few more people off somewhere else. He'd come back and pick them up and take them to the next place.
Hey,
and that was their routine, like twice a week.
Yeah.
Wow. That's funny.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So you could say we need more pubs for recreation.
Well, yeah. But an age friendly community has transportation.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
I actually like aging friendly instead of elderly.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a subsidized, it could be public transportation.
Yeah.
This community is growing, should have something in the planning process for transportation.
It is in the plan.
To take care of the elderly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, okay.
And maybe I don't remember, doesn't the city kick in some grant money too? Or at one point, maybe they don't anymore, to the
Snowy
Valley
Senior Center?
Yeah. Well, and to the transportation program.
I have to check on that.
Yeah. I thought they did, but I wasn't sure.
And others do also.
Grant money's been going all sorts of different places.
I believe there's county money going over that system. Mm-hmm. And, it's almost, the dollar isn't paying much. It's just making them feel like they're not getting a free, they don't want a free ride.
Mm-hmm.
Paying a buck is better than having a free, believe me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially in North Buffalo. four or five writers.
Does anybody else know Mr. Birdman?
Birdman?
Birdman. His name is Bert. Bert. Birdman.
Hmm.
He lives in...
Bert. I heard about Bert.
Bert. Bert?
Yeah. He lives in the senior center. He walks.
Well, he used to work in there.
Okay.
He used to volunteer.
Yeah.
Until he had a little falling out with the director there, who didn't appreciate his volunteer work. Bert is a World War II vet.
Yes.
And you'll see him almost every day walking the trail between Park Street and the post office.
Yeah. Hmm.
He's got that hunched over shuffle. Mm-hmm. He's 93.
Hmm.
My young niece, who split lives with us now for a while, 25 years young, found Bert walking. She took her car and got out and said, "I'm Nina." And now they're fast friends. He had her up. And, you know, he's a hell of a guy.
Super guy.
She just loves that guy.
Yeah. So, another thing I'm throwing out into the... Let's call on Bert someday. Ask him what he thinks.
Yeah.
You actually have a point that discussing a plan for this without talking to those that are working with that community,
yep,
that particular, let's call them the stakeholder, I think they like that word, we're sort of just shooting at the air without knowing what they really need to see in the plan. It's very generic at this point. But if we're talking about developing some goals and policies,
yep,
to guide things in the long haul, can't do that absent talking to the people.
Bert would tell you without redacting expletives.
I have a my grandfather until the day he died, same way.
Yeah, he would tell you that I'll take care of myself.
So Jamie, would it be within the guidelines of the city to contact like the senior center and the transportation to ask them to come to the public hearing and give us some insight?
Yeah.
In Red Oak.
Transitional center.
Under the aging place heading, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do they want the one move scenario? Or?
By the way, here's a crazy one.
That's all I'm going to remember.
Here's part of you know, my history on this is one of the organizations I'm involved with is named for a woman named Annie Boleyn, who was a North Bend pioneer, who, as a woman, her husband died quite young. She had her own ranch. She bought land here. She rented houses. Like the original, you know, North Bend tough lady that we have so many of in our history. She had to go to Redmond when she got old enough to not be able to live on her own, because that was the closest place. The minute that transitional center opened in the 50s, she came back so that she could die here.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I get it.
So they're
one of friends and familiarity, I get it.
You want to make sure that people have that choice. If they want to go to Redmond, if they want to move to Providence Point, you know, that's a fair choice. But we want to make sure they have the opportunity.
I have some good friends that are over 20 years residents that are moving to Providence Point in a month.
And I've seen many people, sell the homes here and they move there because it's the only community in proximity. And they choose it because it keeps them close enough to come out here and spend time with their friends and still be part of this community.
Yeah.
Folks that are in transition are basically Medicaid.
No. It's not what it was a nursing home when it initially opened.
Yeah. Just so sad. They go and they don't come out.
So a number to kind of throw in the mix of this conversation about assisted living, like Red Oak. I'm not saying what their numbers are, but I've got several clients that are in the development side of those buildings and the properties. It's $5,000 a month per room for those kinds of facilities.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gets paid by either the state or the person's assets or
long-term care.
Huge money, relatively speaking.
So
if they're being taken care of in their home, it's $10,000.
You mean for someone to come there?
For hire an assistant to live with them, it's $10,000.
And it gives them a chance for community, so they're not in their home by themselves all day.
Yeah. So
they can meander downstairs and talk to people.
Not that we have to cement this now, but I'm just thinking about this in policy terms. When we talk about affordable housing, we're now talking more about senior housing specific. Do we want to make a provision specifically for senior housing somewhere? Or is affordable housing sufficient as the goals in our policies?
It's really, it's two different things, because senior housing is not by necessity affordable housing. At 5,000 a month, that's not going to fall in the definition of affordable housing.
So do they fall into special needs city residents? Maybe sometimes? So I think there's a gap there. I'm not sure if anybody wants to...
Yeah, and that's where Lynn had added on the last page, the aging in place, because you're right, most of the rest of them address income, having a variety of housing stock, affordability. So we can elaborate more on...
So we'll give a brief kudos to Lynn for that nice addition.
Yep. And if there's any other suggestions there or...
I think we do need some kind of policy that speaks to senior living, but I don't know what that would be. And without doing some research, without hearing from the public.
I was going to say, you could find one senior who wants to be addressed in the city documents.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to chat with him. I'll bet you 90% of what you say, I don't want to even be mentioned in some ordinance or something.
Your dad? We don't want to ask him to.
Hold up to be cranky?
Yeah.
Tell us what he really thinks?
Oh, yeah.
That's good. Bring him on.
Yeah.
He was a city councilman.
He was, but he was also in the Army for 30 years. He can be a little salty at times. But I think that part of what this aging in place is talking about is not necessarily our current population of seniors. We're looking 20, 30 years out. And it specifically talks about baby boomers that are coming into that cycle. And there's a different attitude and expectation, I think, just in general being very generic with that particular generation. So are we actually if we're talking about our 93-year-old World War II vet, they got a little bit of a different attitude than the baby boomers.
The other thing I'd throw in the mix about why I think it's kind of a bad idea for us to figure this out at all, using Seattle as an example of what they've done, and still kind of work it out. So the housing stock built in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 50-foot wide lots, 100 feet or so deep with an alley in the back.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably been 10 years ago now that this really got to be a hot topic, but they were allowing ADUs to be built and permitted, not just built, but actually permitted for the same purpose. The same idea was that, the owner who's been there for 30 years can afford to stay if he can rent out the back unit or have a caretaker live there or have his kids live, however they want to do the dance, just the fact that you could build the structure there legally. So that's the kind of thing that comes when the need comes, rather than us coming up with some never really going to fit language in our code that developers try to address that we don't know what we're talking about.
I think that would be a great policy that we could make a provision for assisting seniors with, maybe, I don't remember what our setbacks are for a second house, but.
Yeah, but see, my point, that came into effect, and the demand called for it.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get ahead of the curve, and we don't even know what the curve looks like.
Most seniors want to live with their kids.
Yeah.
They don't want to live with, they want to be close to them.
I'm thinking a caretaker. That's a...
The issue of the ADUs, though, has become a bit of an issue as it's been abused.
Oh, sure.
And whether or not we need to address and make sure that that doesn't occur.
Right. Good luck.
There's a way. I know.
I don't ever.
Everyone's going to figure out a way to get around the rules, but where do we go to try and make it less likely? And
next
to make
door
it actually...
the person who's breaking the rules. That's how that gets fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah, a guy forgets to take his garbage out one day, and his neighbor's calling him somebody. Anyway, I only want to say that because it just makes the example of how things can work.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you're indicating
market
driven. So what the population is requiring.
Yep.
It doesn't mean we can't plan for something.
Government builds bridges to nowhere. They do it all the time.
You're a planning commission that you don't want any planning? Okay.
I'm here to voice my opinion. No one needs to follow.
So we'll revisit aging after our public comment period. But anything else on our policies on page 12? We're almost there.
Just something I noted earlier as reading through it, the 1-1, top of the page. Encourage development of flexible lot sizes with single-family residential infill. You've already got a lot size, so what do you mean by infill? The lot's there, you're not talking, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I saw that too, and then I was, you know, noting that we'd have different...
I'm thinking about your job in the Cedar Falls community. There's a space, a little pocket park. It was right where the sales office was. They left it unoccupied. It's still vacant. They had a little park there, but that's an off-shop shape lot that maybe somebody might put a two-bedroom in that spot.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe that's what they're talking about.
Just struck me as...
Yeah. I caught that too.
The way we have it, I mean, when I read that, I think of it encouraging someone to come in, say, to one of the old communities, like Silver Creek, and take one of the larger lots that's not necessarily meeting what our current lot sizes are in that area, and put a couple.
Yeah.
And it seems counter to what we just finished talking about.
Yes, it is.
And why? Why counter to what?
Well, because our minimum lot size
ain't
that.
Oh, what you mean? Your LDR discussion. Got it. Yeah.
There's already been a community planner for 80 years, and everything's been covered with larger lots. Now they're getting more population, so they revisit their code and allow for split lots and that kind of thing. That's really out there. But maybe in the core downtown area, you might have some lots like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where basically you're going to rebuild, you're going to tear down and rebuild, but you're stuck with a certain lot size.
Mm-hmm.
At the maximum, you might at that point provide a provision to break it up.
Yeah.
I suppose encourage isn't saying we're going to do it. I just say it kind of leaves it open that could happen.
Yeah.
We'll look at that then. The language is a little bit.
The language that suggests that allows to be more affordable is to be a fallacy. Because the developer is not going to come and do an infill construction, new construction. Something that's more affordable than the house that used to just be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
So like H1.7, you know, we have in there developed strategies to reduce impact fees. We haven't put anything in the code, but I mean it's there.
That's a goal.
Yeah.
And above that, work with King
County. Mm-hmm. Streamlining permit processing. Again, it's there.
Yeah. Nonprofit housing assistance, King County housing, governmental assistance. Several agencies. Scaring the hell out of me.
I look at that 1.5, and this is again what I think that we have. I really wish I had pulled up my little file on this. But I think that the Imagine Housing situation in Snoqualmie brought up a lot of questions about what a city can legally do.
In creating affordable housing?
In bringing in nonprofits. Sorry, the little recorder in my brain is not clicking into the part that I need. But there's something that came out in that I think has to do with there. It was a legal issue that could potentially have some impact on what we can do as a city.
How flexible you can be.
Yeah. I just wish I could remember.
Is that something you guys can?
Yeah, we can
get
into that.
Official word on.
I could take that concept, like thinking of a family selling their estate land, and at the sale, the deed could be amended so that whatever needs to happen on the land next is going to happen. You know, know what I mean? But that's the private party making that decision. Now, if the city wanted to get in and play that game, the city should become part of the market and buy the property with the restrictions that the private owner wanted to have on the land. That, to me, makes sense. Much bigger than playing games with developers and manipulate them and doing something that may or may not be right. So if we had a pool of resources to go, the city could become part of the market to buy things.
Like TDRs?
Yeah. So that we're not forcing people's hands, we're actually taking an ownership role.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the better way to go.
I think that it has something to do with an assertion that it meant that the city was gifting something that they weren't legally allowed to do.
Or yeah, if you find something, shoot it over to us too.
Okay. Moving along here in time. Anything else on 12? Page 13, you got your connectivity.
It's there.
I thought that was the original idea, but that's amazing. 4.2, we're filling in the downtown core.
Jamie, is the city actually wanting to preserve the mobile home parks?
I think in order to, you know, to keep affordable housing, that's key. Yeah.
Someone can buy the Mount Sinai Mobile Home Park can get a home there for anywhere between $20,000 and $40,000. Recent ones have been coming in under 20.
Plus their monthly rent for the space.
Plus the monthly rent for the space.
My question was more, is the city wanting, you know, like they would rather not have an auto dealership down there? Would they rather not have the mobile home?
So we only allow new mobile home parks in the NB zone. So it is limited in where a new one could be.
There's not a whole lot of places you could go and have 3 acres of land and generate $30,000 a month. Mm-hmm. Probably not going anywhere anytime real quick.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go find the food.
Yeah.
So I noticed 4.4. We are doing that, you know, with the new updates. 4.5 is pretty much done. We allow accessory dwelling units, shared housing, cottage housing, infill development. I mean, so kudos. We've accomplished some things that we set out to do.
How are we defining shared housing?
Oh, is it defined?
Anything more than a standard household, how's that?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, is there a specific construction style? Are we talking about something like a boarding house situation where
we allow for both of those. But
we have a friend that lives, you know, on the side of the estates, and make ends meet. She's got a border residence, but you know.
In 2010 census, there were 353 non-relatives living with someone else, according to the census.
In North Bend.
Under 18 is 32. 65 and over is 10.
I'd be interested, though, in those non-relatives, how many they're defining as, what they're defining non-relative is, if it's including domestic partners, for example.
Not a spouse, a child, or other relative.
Mm-hmm. So we could be missing people that are essentially living in, that are not truly.
When was it legal to marry same sex in Washington?
I think after that.
12, 10?
And it doesn't acknowledge domestic partnership, which was there prior to that date. Hmm. So we may be missing kind of a
So, Jimmy, anything else needed from us to be able to... Hold on, page 14. Sorry, I wasn't trying to interrupt. Sorry, I was just curious. We're not getting the job done here.
You guys are generating lots of good stuff. Come on now.
Page 14, there's actually some goals that Lynn put in for aging in place.
Yep.
So if you want to take a moment and just read those over, see if you have any changes or thoughts. That goes to a lot of our conversation.
Yep. In fact, the 4.5 is the ADU in the backyard thing I just mentioned.
We don't have anything about the transportation and bar hopping.
No, I have that in there. I'm going to make sure we... City can and the city's contributing to it too.
All right. Well, any kind of social gatherings and activities for
the most casino.
Yeah. All right. So now you may proceed with.
No, I thought you would already close 14, so that's why I put that up.
So, anything else?
I'll throw one more piece in the mix. It goes back to something I said earlier. If there's energy around changing things, it seems like we've already met way beyond the growth demand that GMA is calling for. So for us to design more growth, why push it? Nobody's making us do it. So the market should be plenty of force.
All right. With that, anything for the good of the order?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
I move to adjourn to the bus.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Meeting is adjourned 9:04. Thank you all
for your comments. Good job, you guys. Yeah.